Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program, it's about birds. And in the studio, none other than our own avian expert, Rich Guthrie. He is here to answer all of your questions about the winged creatures. And guess who just flew in a moment ago? Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited, also here today. And our number to call, if you have a bird call, is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rich and Nancy and your bird questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the program today, and we welcome back Rich Guthrie to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Also joining us today, Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga Springs. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. If you have a bird question, you can also email your questions at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, it's getting to be a tradition. The first Vox Pop after a fun drive.
I love it.
Rich Guthrie time.
I love it. I like to be sitting at the edge of the chair waiting for time to come in.
I don't even know if we planned it this time.
Yes, it was. This was actually scheduled.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's funny because yesterday we ended early enough to do a Vox Pop.
I know,
But everybody was pretty shot, and we ran a special.
I saw that.
And so here you are, and here is Nancy Castillo. And Nancy, we didn't know you were coming, but nice to have you here.
Like you said, I just flew in.
That's what's happening at Wild Birds Unlimited?
Well, we're getting a lot of questions from customers about where are the birds, and I got an email myself.
Oh, yeah?
From the birds.
From the birds.
From the birds.
I'll be darned.
And can I read it?
Well, sure.
As the birdie told you.
It's a letter from your feeder birds. Greetings from nature. We know we haven't stopped by your bird feeders much lately, but we wanted to let you know we're still out there doing just fine and thinking of you. The summer has given us a bounty of natural foods for the taking. There's tons of insects like caterpillars, spiders, grasshoppers, ants, beetles out there, and we hate to pass them up when they're available to us. We're also finding lots of tree seeds and nuts, as well as fruits and berries. So we haven't been in your yard much because we're filling up on all the goodies in the wild. While we haven't been around as much, it's okay to fill your feeders only halfway. Oh, and thanks for keeping the bird bath clean and filled. We know that these natural food sources will eventually deplete. We do check in on your yard occasionally so that when that time comes, we know where we can find a reliable quality food source and some decent habitat to shelter us. Thanks again for all you do for us, even when we're not around that much. We'll remember that, and we'll be back in your yard before you know it. You're the best. Love, your feeder birds.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Nancy. They wrote that, or did you write that?
Well, the birds
came. It was on the internet.
That's very interesting indeed. Well, thank you for coming and sharing with us that. Rich, anything happening that you want to discuss?
Well, upcoming.
No, we'll do that later. Anything
we'll do that
later. In the life of
Hawk
Rich Guthrie?
Migration is coming down the pike.
Oh, yeah?
And I recommend any chance you can get to find one of the premier hawk watching sites in the area. And the other thing, at the other end of the size spectrum, the hummingbirds. Despite the fact that most of them are gone, there's still a few that may be around. And I encourage folks, keep the hummingbird feeders up and hope that they will come in. And this is a time when the real oddball ones come in from the West Coast, the Rocky Mountains, even as far away as Alaska. And they get a little wrong left turn coming down the pike, and they end up someplace in New York or New Jersey or Connecticut, and here we are. So. Keep an eye out. Keep the camera handy.
And I know I've asked you this before, but if they find themselves in New York or New Jersey, are they likely to get back or are they done?
No. We've seen where they come and go. They arrive in the fall, late in the fall, and go away sometime later in the fall. And next year, the same critter, the ones that we can identify, and usually that's by banding them and releasing them so that we can track their comings and goings, which I highly recommend because there seems to be a change going on. Now, it's either with the bird watches or the birds. People are recognizing and keeping their feeders out longer, so they're seeing these birds that might have escaped notice, or there's a change in the pattern of their move of the birds' movement. And if that's the case, well, then that could be a major difference in their distribution.
It's more likely a bit of both.
It certainly is, yes. I think many folks are now aware of the possibility, and so they're alert to it. And the more the merrier. I'm convinced, I'll tell you, that there's a lot of hummingbirds out there that are not coming to backyards, that are feeding on what wildflowers may still be blooming, mm-hmm. where their nectar might be, and someplace around the listening area.
I saw something very interesting. Before we get to the phones, 800-348-2551, the number. I was out front of the station, maybe Monday, maybe it was last Friday. Beautiful sunny day, mm-hmm. looking up, and there was a huge bird of prey, looked like catching thermals, mm-hmm. Across the street, way up. And then another bird, which I discovered, or I believe to be another bird of prey, smaller, but big still, because it was way up, came flying in and started sort of circling this huge bird, harassing it to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And they both flew on the thermals, but the other one was being aggressive toward this very big bird.
They do that. First of all, you're right about what may be happening there, and that is that the second bird saw the same thermal and took advantage of it and used it the same as the first bird was using a thermal. What they do is they catch a bubble of warm air rising. They catch it and ride it, just like a surfer would a wave.
Yeah.
They get as high as they can, and then they break off and head for the next thermal someplace.
Do they
down
do
the
that
pipe.
Just for fun?
No, they're serious about getting out of town. What they're doing is gaining height and gliding. So it's an effortless movement south.
Conserving energy.
Yep.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Nancy Castillo is here, and Rich Guthrie. And let's go to Adrian in New Paltz. You're on.
Hey, hi there. I wanted your thank you for that email. It pretty much explained the first part of my question. The second part concerns the Upper Delaware Scenic Byway. It's the New York State Route 97, and there is a particular nice natural attraction there where you can go in and view. They have a blind open to the public where you can go in. It's supposedly the biggest bald eagle wintering nesting ground. I just wonder if they were aware of that and what month they would recommend trying to put together some hiking and adventures for the cold weather months. And they claim that this is a good one.
Okay, so, I think we got it, Adrian. But I must say that if you're on speakerphone, it's not sounding too good. But I think we got the gist of what
I was able to pick up on that. And you're right about that. Down there by the Orange and Rockland hydroelectric power stations, the various lakes, the Mount Galt Reservoir, Rio Reservoir, Swinging Bridge Reservoir, those have long been attractive to overwintering bald eagles. And for the longest time, this was a well-kept secret because they did not want people to go down there harassing them over the winter because they're very vulnerable during that time of year. But now there is an actual viewing spot that you can go to. And I believe you're correct. It's along Route 97. I'd have to go back and double check. But it is sponsored by New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. The public is welcome to go to that viewing station where they are enclosed in what would be a photographic blind. And they can see the eagles, many of them, coming and going along the reservoir corridors. It's not recommended that folks get out and hike along down there because when the eagles are resting between feeding, they'd rather better not be disturbed. So I think they would not be too inclined to put hiking trails in. So it's a stationary viewing spot, and the public is welcome.
All right, Adrian, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here, and Nancy Castillo from Wild Birds Unlimited. By the way, you mentioned in the letter from the birds, cleaning out the bird bath. How often does one do that? Should one do that?
You know, certainly a couple times a week.
Really?
Yep. You know, it gets bird waste in it. It sits for too long, especially in warmer weather. You might get some algae growth and stuff like that. So, you know, bring in a bucket out and a brush out. It's a pretty quick job and pretty easy to do, and you're more apt to have good activity in it.
Okay.
And there are now heaters, electric heaters that you can put in a bird bath through the winter. And the winter birds love that. They're safe. They're environment, winter environment ready. And it keeps a pool of open water in the ice.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. And we'll get another call or two in here before the first break. Barbara in Northampton, Massachusetts. Barbara, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. It's such a beautiful one.
Yes.
Curious about a couple of quick things. Do birds from the past year, the same birds come back to the same feeding stations, or are they different every year? And I'm curious about how long do birds live, knowing that I'm talking about backyard birds because, birds like parrots and macaws and those sort of tropical birds last years and years. But I was curious about your everyday nuthatch and chickadee and those that we see in the Pioneer Valley in the winter.
Well,
and that's it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Fun questions. The answer to your first question is usually it's not the same birds year after year. But however, birds do have a very strong sense of site fidelity. And birds that do survive through the winter or through the summer, depending on their occurrence, will come back to where they were either hatched out as an egg or where they found a favored feeding area for the winter. And so that sparrow or purple finch or the duck down there by the reservoir, those are likely birds that were there before. And some birds are notable by their features. Have been known to come back to the same spot for 15 or so years. Most birds, your second question, the average bird lifespan is sort of a proportion to their size. Smaller birds live shorter. Larger birds live longer, with exceptions in the rule. But the average lifespan for birds is about 3 years. That's taking in the very high rate of young bird mortality and the exceptional long-lived bird that may, there's songbirds such as cardinal or blue jay or chickadee can live to 8, 9, 10, 15 years.
All right, let's take a quick break here. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo are with us. 800-348-2551, the number. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. Open 7 days with authentic Mexican lunch, U-Fruit, petting zoo, fresh farm market, cider donuts and bakery, new Love Apple Art Space, 518-828-5048. Pelham Auto Service, at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, supplying the greater Capital Region with custom display solutions, commercial casework, and interactive exhibits for trade shows, special events, and museum exhibitions, empireexhibits.com. Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. And Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more. WaterwheelVillage.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you, and thanks to everybody who kicked in during the fun drive. It was amazing, and we're back to regular programming very quickly, thanks to everyone who helped us out here. Our number on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Nancy Castillo is here from Wild Birds Unlimited in Saratoga. Also, Rich Guthrie. And, Rich, there are several events.
Lots of things going on out there. This is the time of year when hawks and waterfowl, the theme of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But first off, let me talk about my I'll be over at the Hoffman Bird Club in Pittsfield on November 6th at 7 o'clock. My talk on Cuba.
Ah.
The Birds of Cuba, also the People, Cars, and Cigars.
Nice.
This is at 7 o'clock at the Guardian Life Insurance Building, 700 Smith South Street in Pittsfield.
Mm-hmm.
And information on that is the Hoffman Bird Club. Now, as far as field trips, do get out, do enjoy. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be taking a nice, easy field trip to Collins Lake in Scotia, New York on the 21st of October. Meet at 8 o'clock in the morning right there at Collins Lake. And then Franklin Mountain Hawk Watch. That'll be November 1st. And then from there, get the details from hmbc.net. That's Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, hmbc.net.
Yeah.
Ducks, geese, and more at the Berkshire Museum. A field trip starting at 7 o'clock in the morning. Meet at the Berkshire Museum with the Hoffman Bird Club. November 5th, that's a Sunday. Bring a lunch and a scope if you have one. Also, more ducks and geese at the Ashokan Reservoir. That's down in Ulster County, New York, November 4th, yeah, with the John Burroughs Natural History Society, jbnhs.org. Further down in Westchester County, Croton Point, Westchester County, with the Mearns Bird Club, October 21st at 8:30 in the morning. There you'll find eagles and lots of migrants.
Okay.
A little further north at the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society, they're having a program 7 o'clock on October 25th on the birds of Costa Rica at the Crandall Library in Glens Falls. Hmm. And one more, and that's it. That's another waterfowl and migrants at the Pleasant Valley Sanctuary in Lenox, Massachusetts, by the Mass Audubon Society. That's massaudubon.org. That's October 21st. That's 7 in the morning. Pleasant Valley Sanctuary. Lots of fun out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nancy Castillo, I know there is a book event coming up at Wild Birds Unlimited.
We have George Steele's going to be at our shop on Saturday, November 4th from 11 to 2. And he's going to be signing copies of his brand new book, children's book, called Wait Till It Gets Dark, A Kid's Guide to Exploring the Night. George and his wife, Anita Sanchez, wrote this book. George is an environmental educator, and he is a former director of New York State DEC Education Camp.
And he's
program.
Been on this program.
Yeah, he's a regular fun guest
great.
Here. Yes.
And he's going to be in our shop, not only signing books, and the books are there now to pick up, but also leading activities at 11:15, 12:15, and 1:15.
Oh, that's terrific. And what day is that?
Saturday, November 4th.
Fantastic. All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Almost gave
I heard that.
The fun drive number there, but I didn't.
Yeah, you're good, man.
All right, let's see. Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had, maybe for Rich, two quick comments / questions. One, I haven't really seen him before, but I noticed within the last week, a few days in a row, one of those little flycatchers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing he's on his way south,
mm-hmm,
and I wasn't sure exactly which one he is. And then the other thing is, I noticed now all the house finches are back with the little red on them. And I'm wondering, is that because they were summering up in Canada and this is their winter home?
Well, the flycatcher is very intriguing. Those little flycatchers, as you say, in which they are, the Empidonax flycatchers, this late in the season are all full of potential because, first of all, it's a very closely related family of flycatchers. They all look alike pretty much. And when we get late ones this time of year, it could easily be one of the western types from the Pacific Coast or the Rocky Mountains or up into British Columbia. So it's always a challenge to identify which of them it really is. And it's not easy. But as far as the house finches are concerned, I'm thinking that they are probably the local bunch that were out and about as they might have been the house finches that wrote that letter to Nancy that was saying that they're here. They're really here. They'll stop in now and then, check out the bird feeders, and pretty soon they'll be camping out in your yard.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't notice them this summer, but
right.
Maybe they
well, that's they were out there someplace. I don't think there's any kind of a change in the population of house finches going on. It has been in the past. They've fluctuated in numbers and distribution, but I think we're good for this year. They're doing what the other birds are doing, and that is playing hard to get.
Okay, and that flycatcher will move on, right? He's
well,
probably going to be gone.
Presumably so. We've had some of those Impidanax flycatchers well into October and into November, and the presumption is that they'll move south.
Mike, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, and our producer Jim Lavoulis brought this in during the break, and I forgot to read it. It is an email. Came in from Lynn in Saratoga, who writes, "Hi, we live on the edge of the forest, are pulling out some non-native invasive plants. Please name your top five plants to put in your yard for the birds." And that's from Lynn in Saratoga Springs.
I'll start with bee balm for hummingbirds.
Yep.
And then there are others such as cardinal flower, a nice red flower that blooms late in the season. There are, jewel weed. I don't like the word weed in some of our native plants.
All right.
I'll call it jewel leaf.
Fine.
It's a wonderful hummingbird-friendly plant.
Yeah.
Beautiful flowers and a lot of fun when the seeds ripen because they have that trigger-happy seed pod that you touch it and it just pops open in your hand. Fun for the kids and good for the birds. And I've seen a lot of birds eating those seeds when they are ready.
Okay. Anything else, Nancy, that you would recommend besides the bee balm, which we have in our yard?
And the hummingbirds love it.
And the bees love it, too.
Yeah.
And don't forget the fruit-eating birds. Lots of nice native berries that you can plant, from Juneberry it's going to be on the tip of
my
tongue.
Okay, well, it'll come back to you.
It's a berry that's good for the birds.
We still have half an hour to go. Let's go back to the phones, and we go over to Christine in Phoenicia. Christine, you're on.
Hi, I love the bird show. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
We
and
love
gals.
You.
A couple of weeks ago, a bird flew by. I didn't see it, but it landed, and it sounded exactly like the word tweet. T-W-E-E-T. Its call was tweet. And I'd never heard that before.
Well,
and it was distinct, and I have an aide who helps me, and she heard it too. And we just looked at each other like, what kind of bird would say tweet?
Tweety bird.
Well, oh, right.
No,
all right.
Tweety was a cardinal. Was a canary.
Okay, well, Rich has an idea.
Well, I'm going to offer a couple of suggestions. First of all, the bird named for that call that it gives, that would be the towhee. That says its name. Towhee? Towhee? But it's usually not
like
flying.
It said that afterwards.
Say that again?
It sounded like it said that call afterwards.
Yes, okay.
It said tweet, and then it sounded like so-wee, or something like that.
Okay. And then other side of the spectrum there, and that is the plover. It could have been flying over. Black-bellied plover, a migrant shorebird that will often call as it's going by in the air. So
it literally sounded like the word tweet.
Tweet.
What does a plover sound like?
It has a twee sound. Twee. Mm-hmm. The various different plovers, the black-bellied plover or the semi-palmated plover or the golden plover, have a very similar but distinctive sound along those lines.
And but, what kind of bird is it? Is it like a warbler or a...
Oh, no. It's the plovers are a larger bird. The killdeer is a type of plover. And the other plovers are slightly larger than a killdeer, and they will make that sound. But they will be, in a hurry, flying by overhead, getting to the next lakeside.
No, this wasn't flying by. It stuck around for a little while.
Well, I'm going to bet with Towhee then.
Towhee.
Who lives up to its name.
Can you make the sound for us?
I couldn't make the sound, but it just sounded literally like the word tweet.
Okay. I bet it's a Towhee.
Okay. Well, Christine...
What species, genus, like how would
oh,
I
Oh, it's a
it
type
up?
Of sparrow. It's a very large, colorful sparrow, black, red, and white.
Beautiful. Thank you
You're
so much.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, Christine. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551, the number. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo are here, and Catherine and Troy also here. You're on.
Hi there. When I called to ask my question, the gal said, it had already been answered, but I have a follow-up. So on the subject of... I've had bird feeders for, at least a decade. I have sunflowers in one, thistle in another, and suet in the other.
Yeah.
And I have had maybe one woodpecker versus 25 birds for a month now. Now, I know the birds normally disappear for a little bit, but it has been a solid month.
Well, Nancy, I don't know, you probably missed the beginning of this program, but Nancy received, oddly enough, an email from the birds. And why don't you summarize that for us, Nancy?
What they said in the email is that they're out there. There's just lots of natural food sources out there in the form of insects. We've only had one freeze or one frost so far, but even with the, you know, if some insects are killed off, there's still egg casings and other, you know, insect debris. There's lots of fruit out there. Look up in your pine trees and you'll see tons of pine cones, and those are filled with seeds that wildlife and birds will eat. So that we've been hearing this, you know, for just like what you say, for all of September, well into October, that the activity has been way down. But you look beyond the bird feeders and they are there, and you'll also see some of them visiting your feeders later in the day. We'll get the woodpeckers through at the end of the day. The cardinal come through at the end
of the
day.
Woodpeckers. Mm-hmm. I do have another question.
Okay.
So, my bird seed is sitting there. Should I empty the bird seed feeders? Should I? I'm worried the seed will get moldy sitting there.
And we did go through a period of that. We had a big heavy rain Monday and Tuesday last week, followed by some heat. So I went out to my bird feeders and my peanuts were turning black. My suet was black. So go out there, check your bird feeders. When it's slow like this, it's a perfect time to take down your feeders, empty them out, clean them with a weak bleach solution, let them dry in a beautiful sunny day like this. Put one or two of them back up, but only fill them halfway. If you put a suet cake out, snap your suet cake in half and only put out a half a suet cake.
Until they start coming back.
Until the activity's there again.
Well, I could say that in my yard, the birds are just, there's no shortage of birds. Yeah. They're coming and going, and I'm constantly refilling my feeders.
You're like Dr. Doolittle.
That's not happening in Troy.
Okay.
That's great. That's great. Half fill everything back up. And then how do you know that the seed is going bad? Does it clump together? Do you actually see mold?
You could eat either one. It'll clump together into one solid mass that if the birds even wanted to get to it, they couldn't pick it out.
Yeah.
You will see mold. You might even see some growth of a seed.
Yeah, they'll actually germinate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Catherine, thanks for the call.
On that, too, the prognosticators out there are talking about, with all the abundant food that we have down here now, we can expect an influx of overwintering birds coming in from the north.
Oh, interesting.
So the finches and crossbills and grosbeaks from the north, they say, stand by. They're on their way.
Wow, interesting.
And siskins, is that siskins there?
Yeah, it's same bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Mark in Hudson. Mark, you're on.
I have a little dog, a Havanese, about 10 pounds, and during the day when we're not home, he has a little door where he can go out into our enclosed backyard and run around. And recently we've had neighbors tell us about seeing big hawks flying, circling around overhead and resting in the trees. And I just wonder, is that a concern? Would a big bird go after a little dog like that?
Nope. Not likely.
Really?
Really. I will say that the big birds that you're seeing around your neighborhood are probably red-tailed hawks. And their biggest meal might be a gray squirrel. That's about as big as they want to tackle. Maybe a small rabbit, but their main food is mice and voles. So I wouldn't worry about the little guy like that during the daytime. At night, cats and dogs, little guys, need to be concerned about the great horned owl, which will happily take something as large as a skunk. So I would be wary of that. I don't believe you're in an area where there are golden eagles. Golden eagles out west will feed on prey that's about the size of a small dog. The jackrabbits, for example, and prairie dogs. So around here, I wouldn't be concerned.
In the day, anyway.
In the day, okay. Right. But at night, stand out there with your dog.
What about small children?
Forget about
no?
it.
No, okay.
There's an old, you know, there's an old myth going around about an eagle snagging a kid off a field.
Yeah,
that was doctored up film.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I was at my kid's baseball game on Sunday, and there were big birds of prey circling around. It was a nice day, and there were a couple of really little kids on the team. I was a little concerned.
Right. Well, they may have been flycatchers waiting out there by third field.
All right, fair enough. Oh, flycatchers. That's very funny. Susan and Kerhonkson. Susan, you're on.
Hi. In my area in Kerhonkson near Minnewaska State Park, I walk in the woods, off trails, quite a bit, and I don't see them in the woods either. And some old-timers that I speak to have agreed, including an arborist, and I just wondered, is there any other explanation for this lack of birds?
Okay.
No, I will say no. And here's what you can do. You could go on to ebird.org and check out what's going on with the bird populations, real-time observations from folks out there in the field. And I think you'll find that it's a matter of observation. And birds, some of the birds, you may have been out there while they were undergoing their molt, and that during that period they will lay low and secretive. And other ones, they're either left town already, and it's, things have quieted down. But if you walk along, there ought to be plenty of sparrows, chickadees, nuthatches, and the like. When I go out, I certainly do find them, and I'm not seeing the shortage that people are reporting. I'm being optimistic about the whole thing.
Nancy?
Okay, well, I will try to be as well, but not in my area. I don't see them. I'll hope for the best.
Yeah,
Thank you.
They are out there. You know, like when I look past my bird feeders into my deciduous trees, it's crazy right now it had been last week with kinglets, you know, ruby-crowned and golden-crowned kinglets, but they're all busy, you know, gleaning insects off of leaves, not making a whole lot of noise, a little bit of noise. So they are a little bit quieter at this time of year.
So when the bad weather begins to come, we will see more activity at bird feeders.
That's a safe bet.
Okay.
And they're going to be a little hard-pressed. They have already scouted out the local eateries.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, there's nothing that you can do to kind of advance that return to your bird feeders. So, you know, natural food supplies have to be kind of depleted.
Yeah.
And once they're covered by a layer of ice or snow is another reason that, you know, they no longer have access to those and will start coming to bird feeders.
Let's take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat and holiday services, cultural services, and more. SaratogaSinai.org for details. Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonably inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20railroad.com. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, findalawyerny.org. Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for 14 years, offering plant, spirit medicine, and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit, clareepearson.net. And Culligan Water of the Northeast, for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work, culligannortheast.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Our number is 800-348-2551. And we're joined today by Nancy Castillo of Wild Birds Unlimited and our own Rich Guthrie here to answer your bird questions. And we go to line 9, Barbara in Grafton. Barbara, you're on.
Hi. I live, as advertised, in Grafton on the edge of the Rensselaer County Plateau, which means it's pretty cold up here pretty early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've yet to feed wild birds because of bears.
Good for you.
I'm afraid of attracting bears and coyotes to my feeders if I put them out. And I want to know When can I safely do that? How do I know?
Well, it's all weather dependent. You got to wait for the bears to go into hibernation. And I don't know that there's a reliable forecast tool that will let you know it's safe to go. So I would just simply hold off until the real hard weather comes in and wait for that.
Do you find hard weather? We've already had a hard frost and ice
not,
on the
not good
water
enough.
Bucket.
When we get maybe the first couple of inches of snow and several nights of a below freezing temperature, then I would start to go from there. So
err on the side of caution.
Oh, absolutely. Don't make the bears happy in liking you.
Okay.
Well, can I add just a sidebar?
Sure.
What about coyotes? Are they attracted to suet-type feeders?
Well, they would be if they can get to them. So the trick with that is to keep the suet feeders high enough where they can't reach it. But they will be attracted after hours to little mice that are also attracted to spillage.
Yeah.
But coyotes are pretty wary of approaching houses too much. I don't know that that will be an onerous problem for you.
Okay.
Well, you seem to misunderstand. I live in Grafton, and the wild animals are braver than the domestic ones.
Okay, then. Then you can expect a couple
of
happy...
And the people as well.
Yeah. Good point.
Wiley Coyote will be by there then, and the interest there will be some of the spillage seeds and of course, any of the mice that are drawn in after dark.
All right. Good luck, Barbara. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And we go to Charlie in Cohoes. Charlie, you're on.
Yeah. Last winter, I was looking up. I heard geese. And every time I hear geese, I look up. And it was a really windy day. They were high up. And I could see they were headed southwest, going over the bluffs where Oakwood Cemetery is. And they were way up, and I was watching them. It was a couple dozen, maybe. And it was really, really windy. And I don't even know how they were doing. They were flying into the wind, and one of the geese dropped off and went the other way. And I was kind of sad for it, and I was just wondering, what happened to the geese that would drop off and the rest of the flock kept going? What happens to that geese? Does it find that it's evidently its family?
No, it's probably not looking
eventually?
For family. No, not looking for family. They don't usually travel around in defined family groups. You may have, by coincidence, extended family members traveling together, and that's only because of the circumstances that made it convenient for them. Now, that individual that dropped off, all I can say is that's very unusual. Usually they will stick together. There's strength in numbers with the Canada geese, and they work with each other to ease the rigors of travel. The one that dropped out, I'm going to suggest, was not feeling well.
Not well, yeah.
Yeah, he was exhausted, couldn't keep up with the pack, and needed to go down, take a rest for one reason or another. So... And the thing is, he probably saw some geese down on a pond or a lake at the edge of the reservoir and decided it was going to hang out with those, rest up, and then move on with that next group. They're not that choosy when it comes to who they hang out with.
All right, Charlie, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Castillo answer your bird calls. Ted in Walker Valley. Ted, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to touch back on, you were talking about the eagles at the Mongo system, and there's also a viewing station set up at the Basherkill by the DEC in conjunction with the Basherkill Area Association to watch the eagles rear their young in the early spring, middle winter, early spring.
Right, you
right
are.
There, that's South Worksboro.
That's a very good point. The Basherkill is one of the premier birdwatching sites in the state of New York. In fact, in the Northeast.
Really?
There's something about the Bash, as we call it, that draws in an extraordinary and totally interesting variety of birds.
Do you have any theories as to why?
There's very food. Few. Yeah, food is usually the bottom line. And the Bash also is one of very, very few similar opportunities for these birds. So they recognize a good thing when they see it. So between there and you're right on about that. So the viewing area, you could look it up. There's information on that with the Mearns Bird Club. Is that about the Bashkill way to go bird watching and watch for eagles there?
I don't know who does it. I know it's the BKAA does it in conjunction with the DEC. That's all I know.
Okay.
But they're always there when we're ice fishing. And what had caught my ear was you were talking about they don't want to set up hiking trails. And the Bashkill is kind of unique in that they nest on an island.
Yes.
And there's no getting to them. So you can really view them and not disturb them.
Right. I would check. Here's a suggestion. If you're interested in going out and finding out more about the bash and the birding, is to go to the MearnsBirdClub.org on the internet. And I know there's a wealth of information because it's their backyard. They love it.
All right, Ted, thank you so much for the call. We go over to Chuck in Williamstown. Chuck, you're on.
Hi. Excellent show. Rich, I'm looking forward to your talk on the 6th. I belong to the Hoffman Bird Club.
Ah, good.
Yeah, I just had a couple suggestions on the gentleman's call about the flycatcher a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I led a walk here in Williamstown on Sunday, and there's still a couple of phoebes hanging around. So that's one possibility.
Right you are. The eastern
and
phoebe.
And the other is that right now there's cedar waxwings and yellow rump warblers that are doing a lot of flycatching from the tops of trees.
And you're right about that. The cedar waxwing is a notorious effective flycatcher. The phoebe, the eastern phoebe, is a type of flycatcher and usually the last to leave. They
right.
nest around here, and for some reason they stick around a little bit longer, and they're readily identifiable by their habit of wagging their tail as they
yep.
sit and wait for the next next fly to go by.
Yeah, so those are possibilities that are probably a little more likely than some kind of western impedanax, although I'd love to see one of those out here, that's for sure.
Right. Expect the unexpected, and that's what we try for. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. That's we good. Appreciate the call. Over to Teresa in Stillwater. Teresa, you're on.
Thank you, sir. My question concerns I won't call it a true feral cat because it was willing to come up and sit on my lap and so forth this late winter, early spring, and so we befriended it and started to feed it. And now I am an avid bird feeder, and I would get birds all summer long. And I had been noticing, I'm wondering if it was because the cat would sun itself on our deck, if that kept the birds away. Well, the cat is gone now. I brought it to a very nice shelter, and I'm just wondering how soon am I going to see my birds back? Because I put out the peanuts, I put out the suet, and the feeders have always been out all summer long. But the actual sighting of many birds is very, very small.
I think that taking the predator out of the mix will help. But as we've been talking about earlier, you're putting your feeders out, or now you're looking for a return of your birds when the birds are kind of laying, you know,
they're not ready.
Not super active at bird feeders. So if you still have the opportunity, just fill them about halfway until you do see them. They will return. I like to say birds don't hold grudges. You know,
but do you think the cat did keep them away? Do you think they realized there was a cat there sunning itself every afternoon and so forth?
Unfortunately, I don't think so, because the birds are wary of the cat, and cats and bird feeders just are not a good mix. And the birds are drawn in. Cats get very clever about trying to scoop up a meal. And,
uh-huh.
And some of you know some cats are kind of lethargic or let's say lazy and are not interested. But most cats can't.
Yeah,
pass
especially
up
if you're feeding it, right? So it wouldn't necessarily want a bird if I have.
Oh yeah, they do.
It.
Oh,
doesn't
yeah,
have anything
do.
To do with the food.
Oh
yeah.
No, no, just strictly mercenary, huh?
Well, that's a good way of putting it, and that's basically what it comes down to. They instinctively try for the next meal. And whether they're hungry or not, and a bird is too easy for them, and a bird drawn to a feeder. So I really discourage feeding birds with a cat nearby.
Teresa, thanks for the call. We go over to Dawn in Del Mar. Dawn, you're on.
Hi, please help. Woodpecker is taking my house down again.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
I had the hole filled up on one side of the house last year, and there's a new woodpecker this year on the other side of the house. I've put up shiny fringe that my husband bought by mail, a Mylar balloon. When it was on the other side of the house, I put a stuffed owl in the window. I'm pounding on the walls, but I go away for a week and I come back and there's a big hole. So, anything I can do? Anything else?
Well, the bird is interested in a couple of things: building a nest or finding food. The other possibility is that it's defending a territory that and drumming on the side of a building will create the noise that woodpeckers use to define their territory. Being that happens in the spring during the nesting season. Not this time of year. Right now they're looking for food. So I'm going to suggest that, hard as it sounds, there's probably some food in there that they're helping themselves. It's like with a tree. They're not drilling a hole in a tree because they want to make a hole in a tree unless it's for a nest. They're drilling in there because there's some insects inside that they're working. They find, they know they're in there and they are in there to excavate them.
So do I need to get some kind of specialist to do this?
I would think at this point, since you tried all the home remedies that I can think of at the moment, I would think that you would need to call in the Calvary,
Okay.
Call in what? Oh, the Calvary?
Yes, right.
Well, what kind of person would take care of this?
I would check with Cooperative Extension to see what they have to say, Cornell Cooperative Extension at the at the Extension office, and then start from there. They will have a remedy or a recipe or a menu of choices.
All right, great. Thanks so much for your help.
Okay, thanks good luck a lot with for that. The call. I'm sorry and to hear that. Let's go over to Jerry in Scotia. Jerry.
Yes, hi. We love your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Quick question. We've had a family of bluebirds this summer, and they had three babies. They fledged. My wife was putting out mealworms for them, and they stayed around for quite some time and then took off. And about 3 weeks ago, all of a sudden, upwards of 11 bluebirds came back again. And they're here in the morning, and they're here in the late afternoon, and they sit on the patio chairs where we used to put the mealworms. So we've been feeding them every day. We put the mealworms out morning and night, and they just have been here all day, every day. Will they stay here for the winter?
Yes. Easily, the easy answer is yes, and especially if you have nest boxes out there. They may
well. And we do. We have 8 nest boxes. Yes.
Well, then that's probably what's drawing them to the yard, because if they're cleaned out, they will use these nest boxes as roost boxes overnight. And
wonderful!
And cuddle up in there on a chilly night. It's
okay.
So I would say stay the course. You're doing good,
Nancy.
Oh, they're great. They're only where they come in every morning. They're only probably 15 feet from our house, and it's like they perch on the patio chairs and everything, waiting for the mealworms. They're so beautiful. Thank you.
They can get used to getting that. Another way you can kind of keep them at in your yard is offering. They will visit bird feeders throughout the winter.
Yeah.
As long as its seed has no shell on it, they'll be interested in suet. They'll love your mealworms if you're providing that all winter long. So enjoy.
All right, let's go to John in Albany. John, you're on.
Yes, about size of prey for raptors. I was walking under a power line, a high-tension power line, with an old truss tower, and where one of the diagonal members came down to attach the leg, just a foot or two above my head height, I saw the carcass of a woodchuck lying on its back in that notch, and it had been fed on. And I was wondering if there was what size hawk could carry it up there and feed on it.
Okay.
Well, again, we have to go back to the most likely suspect would be the red-tailed hawk. Woodchuck would be a little bit large for a red-tail to carry up onto a stanchion. So next step up would be an eagle. Eagles are fond of feeding on carrion. They will and we'll right away dismiss the possibility of a vulture.
So the woodchuck was already dead.
Well, it could have been, more than likely.
It was Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Well, this is a few decades ago, so eagles are unlikely in that area, I think.
I think so, yeah.
All right, John, we're about out of time here, but, well, that was a fun show, yeah?
Yeah, right.
All right, Rich Guthrie, how do people get in touch with you?
Easily. My name, RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. And if you got hummingbirds coming to your feeder or your yard or any other odd birds, take a picture, send it to me. I'll be glad to talk about it.
And then once again, if people have bird sightings and they want to put them on eBird, how do they do that?
eBird.org. Very simple. There's step-by-step procedures once you get there.
And you're the critical judge in charge of making sure that these are not phonies, so all my phonies don't get through.
Right. We try to keep it straight and narrow so that when the information goes into the database, which is available to all sorts of people, from amateurs to scientists, it's accurate and reliable.
Did my pelican sighting get through?
No, I'm afraid not.
Right. And Nancy Castillo, how do people find out about Wild Birds Unlimited?
Wild Birds Unlimited. We're up at exit 15 in Saratoga, right next to TJ Maxx. Our website, saratogasprings.wbu.com, or on Facebook.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. Support comes from Lakeview Orchard on Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Apples, peaches, pumpkins, winter squash, apple cider, pies, pastries, kapusta, galumpki, and pierogies. LakeviewOrchard.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting opportunities to the Capital Region to engage in conversation science, lecture series, and citizen science participants, helping collect data and research, albanypinebush.org. George Heigel Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. And Penny Farthing Investment Management at Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. Thanks again to Rich and Nancy for being here. Thank you for the great calls. And thank you for listening, even if you didn't call. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Barb King answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, get ready for another edition of the Science Forum at 2 o'clock. Right now, stand by for news.